This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the completely redesigned 300-horsepower MDX. More information is available at acura.com.
KCRW has two winter sweepstakes that you could win. Don't miss out on your chance to drive away in an all-new 2007 Mini Cooper or win a five-night vacation in Paris. Go to kcrw.com/join for details.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, Oscar nominations will be announced this week, so we thought we'd talk about what's brought us to this fateful day. When and how did the Oscars become so important to marketing movies? And how do the studios hawk their films to Oscar voters? But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Don't go anywhere. It's The Business from NPR. This week on The Caravan, we ask not, Death, where is thy sting? But rather, Death, where is thy agent? Because if recent headlines are any indication, just because your life's over doesn't mean your career in show business has to be. For instance, the album Rick James was working on before his fatal 2004 heart attack will be released in early May this year. Moreover, James' autobiography, Memoirs of a Super Freak, written while he was in Folsom Prison on assault charges in the early 90s, will be released in April. His estate has also given the go-ahead to screenwriter Sheldon Turner to write a Rick James biopic. It's no wonder they haven't buried James Brown yet. If he was the hardest-working man in show business when he was alive, imagine what he'll do now that he's dead. First up, a James Brown biopic with Spike Lee at the helm. Elsewhere, a schizophrenic year thus far for satellite radio. First and foremost, after years of losing billions of dollars, Sirius reported its first quarterly profit, causing their shares and even the shares of their competitor, XM, to shoot up. More recently, there was speculation that XM and Sirius might be merging, causing shares of both companies to rise. But last Wednesday, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin said that the two companies would not win approval for a merger under current regulatory rules. Not surprisingly, shares of both companies dropped. A day later, Martin reversed himself, saying those rules could be rewritten. Stocks for both companies jumped again. But the stock market can be a strange and fickle mistress. To wit, Apple reported a profit of $1 billion last week for its fiscal first quarter, a 78% increase from the $565 million Apple earned a year ago. But wait a minute. Apple's stock is down 6%. Why? Some analysts worry that the planned June release of Apple's iPhone, which grafts a cell phone onto an iPod, could cause some potential customers to put off their purchases of an iPod until the iPhone is on the market. Elsewhere, what does the Russian mad monk Grigory Rasputin have in common with Netflix, the wildly popular DVD service? Well, for one thing, both have survived numerous assassination attempts. Netflix was written off as easy pickings for Walmart, only to run the retail behemoth out of the DVD rental business. Netflix was also supposed to be destroyed by Blockbuster, but so far, it's held its own. And now, the big video players are preparing for the next battle. Netflix announced last week that it's launching a streaming video service, adding a play button to its little ad button on their website. Walmart is beta testing an online video download service, and the chairman of Blockbuster recently announced that digital downloads will be available on their site this year. Of course, Time Warner may make all of their plans moot. They've announced downloads you'll be able to burn to DVD, cutting out the middleman. NBC Universal and the other studios can't be far behind. Finally, Reuters reported last week that China's movie censor board will not approve Martin Scorsese's The Departed for domestic cinematic release. The reason? The film's plot involves a Chinese plan to buy highly sophisticated computer technology on the black market. The irony here is that the Chinese government's heavy-handed move will stop exactly no one in China from seeing the movie if they want to. The Departed is widely available throughout China because it's already been heavily pirated using, what else? Highly sophisticated computer technology. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, behind the studio gates during Oscar season. But next, how a gold-plated statue becomes box office gold. The first Academy Awards were handed out on May 16, 1929, just 2 years after movies had begun to talk. The ceremony took place during a banquet at the Blossom Room of the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, just a short stroll down Hollywood Boulevard to the Kodak Theater, where the awards are handed out now. The attendance was 270 people, and guest tickets cost a whopping $5. The Oscars were created as a PR gimmick for the movies, and they still are. But the stakes have gotten much, much higher. During the last 2 decades, distributors realized they could game the system, weaving a patchwork of smaller awards into a quilt with which to get into bed with Oscar. In fact, in his acceptance speech at the Golden Globes last week, Dreamgirls producer Lawrence Mark went so far as to say they'd be advertising their movie's win, quote, in 12 seconds. You've heard of the MTV Movie Awards and the Independent Spirit Awards. There's also the National Board of Review, and every Hollywood Guild hands out awards, not to mention the prestigious Central Ohio Film Critics Awards. John Horn is a correspondent for the Los Angeles Times calendar section and a regular contributor to the paper's special awards section called The Envelope. John, thanks for being on The Business.
Happy to be here.
Let's talk about the big awards and what they mean leading up to the Oscars along the way.
The Oscar season is a months, and I mean months, 4 or 5 months long campaign by the studios to try to promote their movies so that they might be nominated for and potentially win Oscars. The other awards are kind of part of the process, and a useful analogy might be to look at the Oscars as the presidential election and the other awards as the early caucuses and primaries. So the Golden Globes, I think, would be the Iowa caucus, and you can do well there and go on to greatness, or you can be Howard Dean and not.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what just happened. There's sort of two categories. There's drama, and then there's comedy and musical. So there's sort of a wider net that gets caught, and then these fish get sort of winnowed down.
I think the media has kind of helped create the Golden Globe Awards and built it into something that it really probably doesn't deserve to be. If you do the math and look how many voters they have, you can actually win the Best Picture trophy with 19 votes.
Take us inside the matrix of the awards season. To what extent are people jockeying for various awards, whether they be the Producers Guild or the Directors Guild or the Writers Guild or the Screen Actors Guild? I mean, there are different constituencies in each award. What's the skins game here, so to speak, for the studios?
Well, the studios look at every award as a validation on the path to the Oscars. So the more kind of third and second and maybe even first string awards they can pick up on the way to the Academy Awards, the better standing they think their film will be.
And what are those?
Well, a Golden Globe is very much high in the list. The film critics organizations used to be kind of relevant. Now they've turned much more esoteric and award kind of arty films. The film critics throughout the rest of the nation, National Board of Review, I think those notices are good. But in terms of attention, it really, I think, comes down to Golden Globes and just kind of consensus building. It's not so much that you pick up more momentum by winning the National Board of Review or the National Society of Film Critics. It's that you get in front of people's minds. People begin to think of you as a deserving nominee. And I think that's what the studios do. They spend a lot of time and a huge amount of money convincing people that the movie they have seen or are about to see is worthy. And the Golden Globes, because it's a big party, everybody goes, it's on national television, reinforces those ideas that they're trying to sell.
What are some of the landmarks along the way? How did the Oscars go from being this sort of, you know, night of 100 stars, celebrity love-in, to this dog-eat-dog, night of the long knives, months of the long knives, really, complicated and nefarious jockeying match that it's become?
Well, people who have been publicists in Hollywood will tell you that people have campaigned for Oscars for decades, and it goes back into the 40s. But I think it really changed in the 80s with Harvey Weinstein and Miramax Films. And I think what changed then is that the tactics became a little rougher, a little tougher, a little more aggressive, that it felt as if you could actually not buy an Oscar or an Oscar nomination, but there were ways of getting your chocolats into the Oscar race, that you could really spend aggressively and get Il Pastino in that rarefied circle. And I think what happened is other companies looked at the success that Miramax was having with some of these movies were good. I mean, Shakespeare in Love probably deserved to win the Best Picture, but some of the movies that they were elevated into the race weren't. And I think other companies looked at that and said, if he can do it, then I can do it. And more important, the actors and the filmmakers saw what an aggressive campaign could do for a movie, and then their agents started calling and complaining. So now you have a situation where everybody feels that if they are not spending millions upon millions of dollars and taking out trade advertisements and doing question and answer panels at the Directors Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, the Writers Guild, if they're not going to every rubber chicken dinner, if they're not showing up for everybody's party, then they are not in the race. And so I think it becomes, you know, you're driven by the fear of what you're not doing. And there's an entire industry that's been created around this. So it was kind of, you know, it's historical, but I think it really took off with Harvey Weinstein and Miramax. And now everybody's in the game because they think if you're not in the game, your film will suffer and you won't be nominated.
Now, what seemingly changed is the, thanks to Harvey Weinstein, is the idea that size doesn't matter so much. It does, but it's certainly no excuse and no reason not to either try or to win an Oscar, right?
Well, I mean, I think it does matter ultimately. I think if you're not able to have a sustained presence in the marketplace, and that means sending out your DVDs, sending out your press kits, sending out your books, your commemorative coffee table tchotchkes, I think if you're not doing that, you're not quite in the presence of everybody's, you know, you're not in the forefront of everybody's consciousness. And I think small films do sometimes get in, and especially in the lesser categories. But if you're going to compete for Best Picture, I mean, everybody's talking about Little Miss Sunshine being in the Best Picture race. I mean, a year ago, last January, when Fox Searchlight saw that movie at the Sundance Film Festival, because I was there, they had conversations about whether or not it was the kind of movie that get the reviews to get into the awards race. So, and they're spending a huge amount of money promoting that movie. So even a small little indie movie, you know, the little movie that could, is getting a huge amount of support from Fox Searchlight. So you can have a little money and use it creatively, but if you're not spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, you will absolutely not be noticed.
It's interesting that the process begins even, you know, before the film hits a theater or before, you know, it exists as a movie even sometimes. We're talking about at the script level. This is going to be our Oscar birth, right?
Well, which is, of course, the kiss of death. When you're making a movie and say, this is our Oscar movie, you know it's going to turn out to be a turkey.
Let's talk about the importance of winning an Oscar or even of being nominated. How important is it now?
The studio that won most of the Oscars in the early 80s, Orion, went out of business about 2 years after they won all their hardware. So it's no guarantee of long success in business. I think the studios look at them differently. They look at them as, you know, kind of a validation of the work they have done. But there's some studios. I mean, Disney would be a great example. Long-standing studio. Some people probably think they make good movies. Disney's never won a Best Picture Oscar. I think there are people at Disney who wish that weren't the case. And some years they look and say, you know, is 25th Hour our Oscar movie? Is The Prestige our Oscar movie? And when it's not, they're probably disappointed.
I'm speaking to John Horn of the LA Times about the tricky business of winning an Oscar. So where are we right now? I mean, what's the next shoe to drop in this season of terror?
Well, the next shoe will be the Oscar nominations, which will be announced on January 23rd, right in the midst of the Sundance Film Festival. The ballots were due on January 13th. So what we'll see is a winnowing of the field and then the real big push toward the finish line. I think the movies have generally been seen. I think they've sent out as many screeners as they can send out, but they will do more question and answer sessions. More nominees will turn up for breakfast with obscure journalists. I think you'll see a ratcheting up of the attention. I mean, you have to remember that there are consultants and guides and publicists and marketing experts, dozens of them, who have made Oscar strategy their career. And so these people will keep very busy and they'll make sure lots of money is spent getting these movies known and seen.
What are some of the low marks or low points for Oscar campaigning history? What's been some of the more nastier and rougher body checks that have been thrown?
I think there are probably two that come to mind. One would be 2002's Gangs of New York campaign by Miramax. The film was in a very tough battle for picture and director, and Miramax enlisted, solicited, enticed, whatever verb you want to use, Robert Wise, a legendary director who made West Side Story and was the former president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, to write an opinion article about why Marty Scorsese deserved an Oscar. And the piece seemed harmless. The problem was Robert Wise didn't write it. A Miramax publicist wrote it and put it under his name. Now, the publicist disputes some points of this story and says that Robert Wise actually volunteered to put his name on this article. But it just seemed to me, and I think to members of the Academy, and may have actually cost Scorsese an Oscar, it just seemed like it was going too far. Wise was not really of sharp mind at the time, and it just felt like they were using somebody to get somebody an Oscar. And I think it felt bad. The Academy thought it was horrible. They were furious about it, and they actually created some rules to stop that kind of campaigning.
Mm-hmm. There was a second instance you wanted to...
Well, I think the second instance is a little trickier because I think reasonable people can have different opinions about it. But when Roman Polanski was in the Best Picture race that same year with The Pianist, soon after the movie was kind of ascending and was a runner in the Best Picture and Best Director race, the transcript, the grand jury transcript of Polanski's sex with a minor case suddenly appeared on the internet. I think it was, I don't know if it was placed there, but the timing was certainly curious. And there were certain people who worked on The Pianist who thought it was kind of opposition research that was planted by another film. Nobody challenged the veracity.
Smell the Dick Morris type.
Exactly.
Kind of leak.
I mean, I don't think anybody challenged the veracity of the actual transcript, but it created, you know, a fair question, but it seemed the timing was bad. The fair question being, you know, should an artist be judged for his work or his, you know, 30 something he had done 30 years in the past? But the timing was very odd, and I think the people who made The Pianist thought was not entirely coincidental.
Hmm. Will we see more of this sort of, you know, mudslinging kind of stuff this year? I'm curious if the fact that there doesn't seem to be a clear favorite to win right now. A lot of people say that Dreamgirls is the front runner, but when things are tight, do things get uglier?
I think they do. I think the Academy has done a pretty good job of creating constantly new rules that kind of rein in this kind of behavior. But I'm reminded of the opening scene of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, where there's a large hulking member of the gang who decides he's going to take on Paul Newman. And Paul Newman asks him, what are the rules? And the guy says, rules in a knife fight, whereupon Paul Newman kicks him in the balls. So I think it is a knife fight. There are not a lot of rules, and sometimes you get kicked in the balls. But I think generally people play fair. I mean, the thing where people, you know, I won't say they cheat, but what they'll do is they'll whisper, they'll say bad things about somebody else's movie, and there's no way to really police that. But I think it's a lot more civil than it was even 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that's really because the Academy has cracked down on people who have stepped over the line. You can't say negative things about another person's movie in print now. You can't enlist the living Robert Wises of the world to endorse your movie. There are lots of things you can't do anymore, and they're all in reaction to various missteps and other kind of subterfuge that other people have used in years past.
And Harvey Weinstein seems to be otherwise occupied.
Yes, Harvey Weinstein is still, you know, he's got a horse in the race with Bobby. I think what's interesting is that even with Harvey Weinstein having left Miramax, Miramax with The Queen and Venus is suddenly much more of a force in the Oscar race than the Weinstein Company.
John Horn is a correspondent for the LA Times calendar section and a frequent contributor to its current Oscar Madness section, The Envelope. John, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, inside the studio Situation Room during the battle for Oscar. You're listening to The Business from NPR. This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. Before each statue is awarded during the Oscar telecast, they show a close-up of all the quavering nominees. But if you think actresses look distraught when they lose, you should see the faces of the studio marketing chiefs. They've invested tens of millions in the outcome. Now, there was a time when you either got a nomination or you didn't. But now, the studios marshal all of their considerable resources to sway the Academy. They hire consultants and pay them by the number of nominations they get. They send screeners and crazy film-related swag to Oscar voters. They book the talent on every talk show that will have them and schlep them around the country to press events. As the president of worldwide marketing for Sony, Jeff Ammer was the general on the campaigns for Memoirs of a Geisha, Closer, Ali, and Adaptation. He's now a marketing consultant to Revolution Studios. Jeff Ammer, welcome to The Business.
Thank you.
So where are we now? The Globes have just happened.
Correct.
The votes have been sealed and cast.
Correct. So now it's just a waiting game. Then whoever has nominations, they go back to a battle plan. They're preparing that plan now as to anticipating, well, we get five, but we get six. You say the maximum number you think you can get, and you hope for that. But you're prepared for, if you think you could get eight, you're prepared for 7, 6, 5, 4, 2, 1, whatever.
And before we move forward, let's talk about what got us to this point. What has happened in the last few weeks? What's been happening within the marketing suites of studios like Columbia and Universal and so on?
What's been happening is they've used the power of all the awards up until this point, and most importantly, the nominations of Golden Globes up to this point, to sell their movies. And the caveat that you have with the Golden Globes or any of these is you can say winner of two nominations. You're not saying that you won anything other than a nomination.
That's some odd parsing. But
it's very odd, but and it's legal, and yeah. It's been vetted many times over. But the word winner is what you see blasted across the top of your newspaper ad, or you hear in a voiceover in a TV spot, or you hear it in a radio spot. What you have to be prepared for on the night of the Golden Globes as a advertising department is you have prepared ads for the next day that give you your best case scenario down to the worst case scenario, worst being you won nothing. And those ads have to be ready at a moment's notice. You say, go, and that's what's distributed to all the newspapers. That's your ticket between now and the time that the Oscars, the nominations come out. With the nominations then is the marketing departments go back to work to try and win your vote for their particular writer, director, screenplay, music, song, sound, the soundtrack, by going back to advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And if they won Golden Globes or they won the Palm Springs Film Festival or whatever else, that's also thrown into the mix.
What is the process that happens at a studio?
First of all, you have to budget this out. I mean, because there is no budget for these. You go through the course of your year, you've budgeted your movies to market them, to bring them to the marketplace, but there isn't a specific set-aside budget at that point for Oscar campaigns. At least it wasn't in our case. It's a little hard to do because budgets can range from $2 million to $20
million. For an Oscar?
For an Oscar, for a campaign.
Uh-huh.
And this, when I say Oscar, I mean the whole process, be it Golden Globes, be it, the whole process. So I think that part of what you're trying to figure out is what's going to be the best for the studio and what's going to be best for an actor. Now, some actors may look at their role and say, well, I'm a best actor in this movie. But if you look at the best actor category, there are way too many big movie stars and big acting roles. You might not have a chance. So you may go to the actor and say, here's our choice. We can be a best actor category, or we can try and push to best supporting, which seems to be a little bit less impactful right now than the actor category.
That's a really, very delicate conversation to have.
It's a very delicate one, but it's also a one you don't want to have with just yourself. You don't want to wake up one day and really annoy someone by saying, we didn't think your performance was the best acting performance, even though you're on the screen 90% of the time.
What does an Oscar really mean? How much money does that accrue to the studio? How important is it to win?
It depends on the movie. I think that we've seen in the past where some of these smaller movies have benefited greatly, and you know, tens of millions of dollars have come in once the movie had won the Oscar. On a bigger movie like Dreamgirls, everybody benefits financially in the long run because it'll help you with your ancillaries, with your DVDs and all the other ancillaries. The other thing that it's good for is it's good for the studio to be known as a place for filmmakers and talent and writers, that you make an eclectic slate of movies and you make big blockbusters, but you also make movies that win Academy Awards. The hardest part is to back more than one horse. When you've got two or three movies that you're trying to position in the marketplace, all three for Best Picture, all three for Best Director, all three for Best Actor, you're kind of cannibalizing yourself.
The ultimate Sophie's Choice.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's a difficult position to be in because you have to give equal weight to your filmmakers. So every time you buy an ad for picture A, you buy one for picture B, and you buy one for picture C. And somebody at some point is going to say, have you lost your mind? You can't spend that kind of money.
In what other ways can a studio apply body English to the Oscar pinball machine? One is sort of courting the press.
Courting the press is a tough proposition because once you step the first toe into the water, the rest of your body's wet. You can't just show it to one person and then go, I didn't like that response. We're not going to show it to anybody ever again. Because if this is an Academy picture, you're going to be all over the place. You're never going to find a movie that 100% of the critics love the movie. I've never seen that in my career. But I think that, you know, you're out there, you're trying to show the picture as much as you can, as soon as you possibly can. But that's a strategy also. You don't want to be too soon, and you don't want to be too late.
Behind the scenes, what happens next now?
Nominations come in, and then you're going to see the machines go back to work. All the people who have nominations are going back to work, and they're going to try and win the Oscar in every category they possibly can. So now it's a whole different scenario, so that maybe you weren't really, you know, you were hoping maybe you'd get some nominations in the higher categories, but you may go in there and win three technical awards. You may go in there and win makeup and hair and costumes. They're still Academy Awards, and they're still at your studio. So everybody now has the job to do to figure out, once these nominations are in, how do I go back to work? And in some cases, do I re-release a picture?
You got a prediction?
I'm sticking with Dreamgirls.
Who are they most worried about, by the way?
I would think Departed, Babel. You know, for a while I thought Clint Eastwood's movies were really, you know, I really liked Iwo Jima. I don't know if it's in the foreign category or it's not, but, you know, at one point that was a consideration. I thought World Trade Center was a great movie, but it really didn't get anything.
So can you pick for us the five? I mean, based on your years of experience?
I would tell you that, in my opinion, you've got Dreamgirls, Babel, Departed, Little Miss Sunshine, and the possibility of one of Clint's movies.
There you have it, from the horse's mouth. Jeff Ammer, president of G2 Marketing, consults for Revolution Studios and the former head of worldwide marketing at Columbia Pictures. Jeff, thanks for being on The Business.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
You've been listening to KCRW's The Business. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Treatment, a weekly conversation with some of the most influential and innovative people in movies and popular entertainment, hosted by film critic Elvis Mitchell. Check out the podcast of The Treatment at kcrw.com.